and register your concerns about Sean's arrest, you should call 429-3550, 429-3550, and that is a 24-hour number. You can actually call after 5 o'clock or before 8 in the morning or between 12 and 1 when the offices are closed. You can get a tape which you can actually record a message to the City Council, any City Council member, including Council Member Rotkin, who is currently, and unfortunately, our mayor. So that's something you can do, and talk about Sean Alini being in jail. That's misdemeanor jail. Misdemeanor sleeping. Sleeping twice within 48 hours, we think. We're not sure. Compliments of Sergeant Clark, who now apparently has stopped stealing blankets under order, I presume, from the city manager, but now is stealing people. I suppose that's, I don't know if that's an improvement or not. I mean, this business of arresting people for sleeping and taking them into custody when they're engaged in a First Amendment protest, it's not a good thing, folks. It's not what should be happening. Well, you may say, hey, they're there to be arrested. This is what Mayor Mike Rotkin says. They come down to be arrested. They want their blanket stolen. They want to be taken to jail. No, they don't. They want to change the law. They want to be allowed basic free speech rights like anybody else. They want to bring this issue to the consciences of the city council and get the public to bring it to the conscience of the city council. That's what they want. And unfortunately, arrests and jailings are not particularly helpful in this regard, really. I mean, they are outrageous, but they aren't particularly good.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
On the phone calls, this is Chris, you get 3 free phone calls. The accused gets 3 free phone calls between the time that he is arrested and the time that he is taken to the place to which he will be arraigned.
Hey, Crossroads Chris, did you find this was true in cases where you were arrested?
Well, I didn't know about it.
Because I've only been given one.
I don't know if there's any penalty if they don't give you 3 phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I lost a slip of where I had this printed, but it is a penal code that you are allowed 3 free phone calls.
Let me ask you this, I've got you on the line.
Yeah.
You're a man who uses the Internet a lot.
Not lately.
Oh, you haven't been? Because I hear there's been a lot of material on the Internet recently about the Robert Norris Kahn, my case, in terms of the conviction for serving free food in San Francisco. And since I don't have access to that, I wondered if you had.
I haven't seen it. Where has it been?
I don't know. I guess on the Food Not Bombs news group. Which is at, what, food?
Alt.org.food-not-bombs.
Right. Very good. Alt.org.food-not-bombs. So, any other reports you want to bring up at this point, Chris?
No.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And that was Crossroads Chris, who's been following homeless subjects for the last three years, at least, that I know of. Actually, he's been involved in protests and in supporting protests since 1991, probably before, but that's when I first noticed Chris. He's a controversial fellow in many respects at different times, but he's also a very eloquent and articulate analyst of the scene, and he often draws links with international issues and brings our attention to national issues regarding anti-homeless policies in different cities, particularly San Francisco. So I want to thank Chris for calling in and invite him to do more updating in the programs to come. Let's hear Catherine Byers. Let's see what she has to say without further ado. And I'd hope to kind of get some of this interview going before the 11 o'clock meeting between Byers, Celia Scott, Dan Hopkins, Pat Ring, and I guess some other folks. Although I think this attempt to close and limit meetings is a bad idea. I don't think people should consent to it. And I trust the people that are going into the meeting. But I think that open meetings really should be the hallmark of what we do, particularly since we've had such trouble with the Sherry Connable closed meetings that occurred around both this most recent state park campground situation and then her earlier Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep. I think that it dooms us when we do that. If we attempt, it also tends to hook our sails to the city council people, because the reason that they're closing the meetings is to make it more agreeable to the city council members, so the more outspoken members will not be allowed in, and I don't think that's appropriate. Disagreeable, as I sometimes find, disorderly people at meetings. If somebody comes disorderly, they can be ejected. That's always what can be done. You shouldn't censor people before meetings. Let's hear Catherine Byers. This is from an interview yesterday, I believe.
Okay, it's April 28, 1996. About to give a quick call to Catherine Byers, 10 o'clock on Sunday morning.
Calling you about a couple questions I had on your machine. Also doing it for Free Radio Santa Cruz on Monday when I'll be broadcasting this.
Okay.
I guess the basic question I had was, I heard you drop by the City Hall sleepout vigil last night on your way back from Sacramento, and you had some good news for the demonstrators.
What is good news?
Something about the blankets.
Well, I just, you know, I don't have anything specific, but I just, you had said that they did the night before, so I'm hoping that that is what's happening. Is they're, and they said, that, yes, they took pictures and not blankets, so.
Have you actually spoken to the city manager on this issue?
I think Dick, probably last Thursday, he said that he indicated that, Mike indicated, too, that they had spoken about it.
I see.
From that, it seemed very positive.
I don't know if you got my lengthy kind of agitated message where I told you.
Oh, I did. No, and I absolutely.
I was concerned that Chief Belcher apparently was telling them that there were only two blankets on lockup when there are more than 60 confiscated. I don't know if they've ever reached the lockup or not.
Yeah, well, I got that corrected.
Oh, good. Do we know how many there actually are in lockup now?
No, I don't know how many there are. I just know there's way beyond two, and somehow I don't know how that information got conveyed to Dick, but it certainly wasn't correct.
So you've received no specific reassurances, but your hope is that this will have stopped.
Right, yes.
They actually did take a blanket on Friday morning, by the way, from Jimmy
That's
Riley.
They said, yeah.
And last night, on Friday night, Saturday morning, they gave 7 tickets, but unusually, they took no blankets.
Mm-hmm.
And then tonight, this last night, there were no tickets, no blankets, in fact, no police presence at all, which occasionally happens on the weekends. Now, is there a meeting on Monday of the city council?
Not of the city council, no. We actually had one scheduled, but it got canceled because it had to do with the South of Laurel. And so, you know, we were going to take that opportunity if we needed to put that on the agenda, but there is no meeting. There's no meeting on Monday.
So if we find blankets again being confiscated, what should we do, Catherine?
Call me.
Okay, actually, we were thinking of going to the city manager's office with the blankets we have and sort of...
You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz. We interrupt this interview with Catherine Byers.
Don't do that, Robert.
Oh, who is this?
This is a fellow DJ. I'm just telling you that your phone levels were low, and you could hardly hear Sean. You could hear Chris better, but you got to watch those levels.
All right. Well, thank you.
And, yeah.
And lengthy discussion with him and say maybe waiting there until all the blankets are returned. That is one possibility we've been discussing.
Returning the blankets?
Yeah, the blankets should be returned and that the city manager should issue a clear directive to the city police department.
The city manager's gone for a week.
Oh, really?
Yes, he's gone
so
for a week.
So Gay Strand is taking over?
Gay, yes. But I just, it seemed from Mike's indication and Dick Wilson's that the issue has been dealt with.
And indeed, I'm interrupting this interview to point out the issue may well have been dealt with. Catherine has invited the protesters to call her if there is a problem. And for our listeners who want to contact Catherine Byers, her number is 426-6108. That's 426-6108. That's her home phone number. And by the way, it is listed in the book under capital B-E-I-E-R-S, Byers, Catherine Byers. She's quite good about returning phone calls. She's a bit rushed sometimes on the phone. But she does speak to you if you call her up, sometimes after a 2 or 3 day delay, and often she calls back sooner than that. Continuing this interview with Council Member Catherine Byers.
But let's just stay on top of it. Let me know if that's not so.
Okay. Regarding incoming phone calls to City Council, you had a very interesting point you made back in at the council meeting when the discussion on the drumming law came up, which was that while Michael Rotkin, currently our mayor, has said that he's been getting only complaints of drummers and many of them, you had a different experience as a
I didn't have any.
As mayor back last year when you were mayor?
Yeah, until November, end of November.
What kind of complaints did you get regarding noise when you were...
Well, the kind of complaints I got regarding noise, and we certainly got them, and it really had to do with, people underneath the windows, particularly at the El Palomar, at the coffee roasting company.
Mm-hmm.
And, since then we've done some things. We moved other newspaper racks, took the phone out.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that really took care of it, but I think it helped.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly had also, indications that there, people from El Centro talked in general about the noise. It wasn't specific bongo drummers.
Mm-hmm.
But very, just a couple, I'm not even sure, a couple calls as much as some meeting with them a couple times just in, about noise in general late at night or in the evening, but it wasn't specific, and I had no phone call specific on bongo drums.
Now, you actually voted in favor of this so-called Bedtime for Bongos ordinance when it appeared on April 9th.
Right. Oh, yeah, I think yes.
And you spoke about it. You said you think it seemed like a reasonable ordinance to you, and yet after hearing the testimony of 20 or 25 people, you changed your mind. Why was that?
Well, certainly I really was narrow in my thinking that it really was just bongo drummers on the mall, and sort of was ignorant about the whole drumming community and what drumming is to people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that really, it was just an eye-opener.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I thought about it, I thought, yeah, you're right. People, you know, sometimes they sit on a bench here in West Cliff Drive. You know, I see people drumming, and it I thought, you know, and I meant it when I said I thought it was a little heavy-handed, that was just specifically drummers.
Mm-hmm.
And 8 p.m., and I was much more, it then occurred to me, wait a minute, we have noise problems, and I don't want to...
limit it to drumming, per se?
I don't want to limit to drumming, I think we have some problems, and I want to deal with them. It is very unpleasant, whatever the noise is.
Mm-hmm.
Bill Cox from the Planning Commission, former Planning Commissioner, wrote us at the same time and said, you know, what he's finding annoying, and he lives above, not El Centro, the one next to it. And he said it's the fife drums,
Fife player
that's driving him crazy at night.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I just thought, wait, I want to get a handle on noise
mm-hmm.
in general in the evening and not so specifically on this stuff.
Now, that was a very unusual debate at City Council. I mean, normally you and Celia will take one position, frequently a more liberal position on some social issues, and others on the council, sometimes Scott will support you, but frequently you're alone in that position. On this occasion, there was a complete turn of events and a unanimous decision to put this whole matter off for a month to give Tom Noddy and Arthur Hall, I guess
right.
Arthur King,
mm-hmm.
an opportunity, I'm not sure what his last name is, to
mm-hmm.
talk to the drummers,
wow.
talk to the residents, see if there's something could be worked mm-hmm. out. Now, I wasn't sure at which point the debate made that turn. Was it Scott Kennedy, you think, who made the initial move in that direction, or did Jane Yokoyama say something that indicated she would really favor a mediated solution?
Well, I think what I heard, and maybe I'm not sure, was a couple council members mm-hmm. thinking there was no hope for mediation.
Right.
And... you know, I tried to make the point that we hadn't even tried it.
Mm-hmm.
How do we know that something can't be worked out? And I think then when Celia then picked up and made the motion, I think Scott really said, yeah, that seemed reasonable. Why not give it a try?
I think Rodkin had made, again, a press to get this thing quickly
yes,
passed.
Yes,
and then,
so did, yes.
My recollection was that Scott made this statement. He appealed to Tom Noddy in the audience.
Uh-huh.
And it was my impression that it was that statement almost by itself that made opposition collapse
yes.
to that.
Yeah,
but then I heard afterward that Jane Yokoyama had said something beforehand
mm-hmm.
that precipitated Scott's statement. Did you remember that, or... I want to make sure I'm giving credit to the right people.
Yeah, I'm
no
not,
problem.
I really don't.
The other question I have for you...
We are interrupting this interview with Catherine Byers from Sunday or Saturday or somewhere around there because we have a special guest that's just appeared in the studio, that notorious world traveler, Traveling Tom Noddy, who I've insisted on calling Tom 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 because of his involvement in the issue of the rights of everyone in town around the issues of drumming. Hi, Tom.
Hello, Robert.
And let's see, we got our
Am
mic.
I on yet?
I think you're on. Go ahead.
Testing 1, 2, testing me, testing you.
I think you're on there.
Okay.
So Tom, you've been on the air at least 2 or 3 times now, kind of giving the background of the street performers' guidelines. You went to City Council on April 23rd. What happened there, and let's take it from there.
Well, it seems like you've been covering that with your previous, the interview that the listeners have been listening to. I was as surprised as you at the turn of events. When it first came to the council, when this proposal first came to them, it was, you know, hot knife through butter, 6-1, the one being Celia Scott. But they were rightly watching out for the interests of the downtown residents who were being kept awake by drumming at night. And so they were prepared to pass this drummer's curfew, 8 p.m. to 10 a.m. curfew on drumming citywide. Because it turns out there are some other residents near Lighthouse Field and other places who complained about drumming, so it turned out not to just be a downtown situation. And as I say, 6-1, it passed quickly on the first reading 2 weeks later. And even that time, only like a couple of them, three drummers, I think, three showed up to address the matter before the city council.
It's at the April 9th meeting, the first meeting of the first reading of the ordinance.
Exactly so. And so hot knife through butter, three drummers, and even among them, it wasn't unanimous that they were absolutely opposed to the way this was going. So I just thought, well, I'll show up on the April 23rd meeting, and I had wished that the council would have tried other things, other approaches short of ordinance, but I figured it was a sinking ship, and I just wanted to salute it as it went down.
Proceed to the wake, eh?
That's it. And anyway, I knew you'd be there. So
who would miss me at such a thing?
So I went to the council. I had my little say in amongst what turned out to be a very large group of drummers whose message and sincerity seemed to really impress the council. I thought they were kind of in a tough position in that they were about to vote this thing through because they really had no alternative proposal, and what could they do but keep their word to the residents of the downtown who had called for this, and they'd already accomplished. I mean, it was all but accomplished. All they needed to do was let this vote go through. That clearly was going to go through. Catherine Byers was strongly impressed, clearly, by what happened. She reversed her vote to the cheers of the crowds. She said that she'd been unaware of the fact that there was even a drumming community, much less people as articulate and concerned and respectful as those who showed up at the meeting.
And indeed, as I was pointing out, some of these folks were property owners and middle-class people with middle-class jobs who were drummers only on special occasions.
And they did make a point of saying that I'm a property owner, I'm a drummer. Personally, I don't think that should be an important aspect. Taxpayers, and sometimes people make a strong point of the fact that they're taxpayers. The Constitution permits the government the authority to rule, and that authority, it declares, is from those who are governed, not those who pay for it. But nonetheless, people made that point that they come from all aspects of the community, and it really was a cross-section of the community that came out and spoke to it, and Ms. Byers, to her credit, was impressed by that and addressed it and reversed her vote on that particular ordinance. She made it clear that she was not reversing her her idea that the residents of the downtown should be protected from those who would disturb their sleep. People began to suspect, oh my God, maybe other votes could switch and this could happen, although those realists among us were sure that we weren't going to go that far. And sure enough, as it became clear, each council person spoke to the issue, and it became clear that the votes were not there. It was pretty clear, 5-2, it was going to
pass. There was going to be an ordinance making it illegal to drum after 8 o'clock at night until 10 in the morning.
That's right. That was
throughout the city of Santa Cruz.
And that was a very impressive aspect of it. Even the drummers themselves who were in favor of protecting the rights of the elderly residents of the downtown hotels were concerned that, are you kidding? Are you going to pass a law that's going to make it illegal for me to drum on the beach next to the cliffs? I mean, isn't that where you want us at night? So, and they put it that way, and sensibly, in a way that you could see questions on the face of a few of the council members. Ms. Yokoyama made it clear that she was... She thought there was a good argument for this. However, she didn't think there was really a proposal. Nothing was coming from this group that she could get a hold of. There was this concrete proposal before them that, in fact, had already passed, and all it needed was this vote, and it was going to go through. And on the other hand, she had, all of this talk, but kind of air, and she wished there was something more concrete, but lacking that, she was about, she declared that she was going to vote for this proposal. That's when it became clear to me that the votes were not there. Scott Kennedy then was going to speak, and he spoke and also was conciliatory toward this group and toward the issue in general. However, he didn't believe that the time for reconciliation he thought had already passed, and that this thing needed to be done by the council. Part of the problem is that government, I mean, This is their job. They make laws. They're a legislative body. They make laws. If you bring your issue to them, what they can do with it is make a law about it. That's their job. That's what we want them to be doing. They don't really have another clear role. If you want mediation, don't go to the council. You know, you look for the people you want to mediate with. Look for mediators. Look around the community elsewhere. If you want a law passed, go to the legislative body. And that's where we were. And the legislative body knew what they could do. They could pass a law. And they were about to do that when, and I know you were as amazed as I was, kind of mid-sentence, Scott Kennedy, after essentially declaring that he was going to vote for this, I don't really know what did happen, and it really was mid-syllable.
Right. It was amazing. It was like a thunderbolt from the blue.
But you know, they were all clearly perched on that edge. You know, the people were ready to go. When the vote came down, the only vote that was taken that night, which we all expected the vote on the second reading of this ordinance, it would pass. But instead, as they were all about to plunge over that cliff, instead the vote that was put forward, a motion by Jane Yokoyama, was to postpone this for 30 days. Again, that was Scott Kennedy that put forward the idea that, well, you know, if Tom Noddy and others, if people did want to bring something to us, then if there was some way that we could, and then Jane Yokoyama proposed, well, what about a 30-day waiting
period?
Was
it Jane or was it Celia Scott?
It was her motion, seconded by Celia, and passed unanimously.
Unanimously, amazing.
Very quickly.
There was not much discussion, considering everybody in beforehand for the last 2 weeks had spoken in favor of restrictions.
I was like you, paying pretty close attention to what the process was that was going. And I can tell you today that it was a motion by Ms. Yokoyama, that it was a second by Celia Scott, that it was passed by, only because I checked with the county clerk, city clerk's office today.
Mm-hmm.
So technically, what happened? You know, because it, as you said, it was very quickly, zoom, bada boom. They all were at that edge. They wished they could do something.
They were
like
on the
this.
Edge of pushing us all off the cliff when they decided to give us a month to find another way down to the shore, so to speak.
That's right. Well, they were also on the edge. They all wished they could do this. They just didn't see a way out. That was what Ms. Yokoyama had said earlier when she had spoken. She wished that she had another proposal to consider, but the only thing they had was this one proposal to...
I mean, it was really reassuring, too, to me. And I mean, I probably it's false reassurance because it's such an anomalous event. But to see this happening, to see people being given respect for what they say at a council meeting, to see the Kennedy favoring mediation not merely in the Middle East and Guatemala or Nicaragua or whatever, but actually in Santa Cruz on local issues, not merely for weakening the police board, but for real issues that might, where he might get some flack from the business community. I mean, I am really impressed, and I said I went home and I wrote him a letter, which I haven't sent yet because I'm still working on kind of paring it down. He deserves a lot of credit for that. And, of course, he's given you a big job. And, by the way, if anybody wants to follow this debate, if you really want to check the strange and very significant process of this discussion, you can go straight to the library and you can pull the tape from the reference section. They'll give you a tape recorder in the library. You can listen to the tape of the City Council meeting of April 23rd. It's the evening session. I think it's item 35, but you should check the agenda to see what it is. Maybe it's 38. I think it's 38, actually. But, Tom, now, what was the substance of that resolution that was passed, and where does it stand now?
Well, it's delightful to hear you so optimistic and responsive to this, to the fact that they've gone this far. But we shouldn't get carried away with how far they've gone. They don't want to reverse their commitment to the elders downtown. All they did was they permitted 30 days for the drumming community to come up with some other proposal. Still, we have to say the weight of what's going on, it's already passed once, is this proposal that will ban drumming citywide after 8 p.m. until 10 a.m. That's still the most likely thing that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes before the council on May the 28th.
Something like that, I'm not sure.
When it comes before them, then probably that's what will happen. As of now, one would have to say that's what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
However, between now and then, they've given us an opportunity. They're skeptical that any sort of resolution short of that could work or would be accepted by the residents. But they've given us this time to see if we could come up with another proposal that would gain the respect and the support of the residents in a large enough section of the community that they might reconsider what they've already started doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have until then. And so the drummers are going to have a meeting. We're going to get together on May the 1st, where the newspaper today, I think, put it well. We're going to try initially just to gather the drummers and excuse me, and speak speak among ourselves to see, you know, what they as a body really want to do about this.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard some people suggest, maybe sundown. Sundown would make it later in the summer before they had to stop drumming. It would make it earlier in the winter
mm-hmm.
when they had to stop drumming. Some people are saying, well, maybe just the downtown. What about the people out at Lighthouse Field, the residents on Pelton who are also concerned? Some people are saying, there will be many things that are batted around. What we need to see is what the drummers can get behind, because I think that the only thing, if any sort of mediation can work, it's going to be, actually, what I'm saying to the drummers right now is, forget the city council. That's something that we have to deal with sometime late in May. Right now, we don't have a city council problem. Right now, we have a problem between the residents who are being disturbed by the drumming. This is what we have to address. Forget the city council. Later on, there's a date at which we have to deal with the city council.
Are any residents being invited to this meeting?
Not to this meeting. This is a meeting of the drummers. We want to find out who we are, what we support, before we then mix it up with them.
But presumably you'll be talking to them as well.
That's right. We're trying to arrange some sort of meeting, maybe a smaller one. What I don't want to do is gather 600 drummers and six residents from the community
right.
to take the two sides on this issue. You know?
Right. The drum beat of one will be louder than the eardrums of the other.
I think you got it. So we are going to try to get together. What the council asked, technically what the council asked was that the drummers try and work it out. What came out of that thus far is that Tom Noddy and Arthur Hall will work, and we've had some assistance from a couple of other drummers, Paul Gratz, Woody Carroll, and there'll be others, I'm sure, who will step forward to help us come up with how to go about doing this process. And once we figure out who we are, how much we're willing to sacrifice, because I think it's got to come to that. I think the downtown residents, why should they change their mind? They've already got the council on the verge of giving them an 8 p.m. to 10 a.m. Curfew on drumming.
Mm-hmm.
Why should they back off of that? That will be enforced by men with guns in holsters. You know, what are we going to propose? Well, you know, it'd be nice if the drummers could. I mean, you know, you could give me a call sometime and I'll come. You know, I don't. I think the only way that they could be encouraged to support an alternative to what they're about to get is if we offer them something more.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I will be saying to the drummers. The drummers may well say to me, yeah, Tom Noddy, back off. We never elected you anyway.
Right.
We'll see what happens amongst the drummers. Let's find out if they support offering perhaps more. Sundown actually maybe does give them more. Maybe the residents think, well, you know, but how is that going to be enforced? Does that really work, you know? The street performers' guidelines have worked for 16 years, and they are happening without the force of law. They solve problems in 98% of the cases.
And remind our listeners what those guidelines are.
In 1980, there was an effort to ban street performing in Santa Cruz, and so at that time, I was a street performer, and I got together with other street performers, and 35 of us came to consensus on some voluntary guidelines, which have to do with rotation. You know, don't play in one spot for more than an hour if somebody asks you to go. Don't set up too close to somebody else that's already playing. Be respectful of not only your listeners who are. It's funny, among the street performers, the audience is transient. You know, they're the transients.
Mm-hmm.
They come and go. We stand in one spot. They go past us. Yeah. For a long time, that was enough for a lot of street performers. They said, look, if people don't like my stuff, they're not trapped in a hall with me. They didn't pay any money to come. They can just walk away. It's like turning the dial kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it took some of this discussion and some complaints for the street performers to realize, yeah, but what about the guy in the shop you've got your back to right there? What about that guy? He's heard your set. You've just played it four times through. Mm-hmm. He's got his own tapes he wants to listen to. Does he have anything to say about this? you know? Well, the property, I'm not even talking about the property owners or the merchants or the capitalist class that runs the society. I'm talking about the guy working in the shop behind you right there now, that guy over there. Mm-hmm. You know, does he have a right to ask you, come on, man, move. I want you know, let that other guy play here, you know? And, you know, once they did hear it, once they did process that information, the performers went, oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the moment I'm looking for. I'm hoping will happen with the drummers here.
Let me ask you about that. That was it a series of meetings you held in 1980? Was it one meeting? How long did the process of coming to consensus on these guidelines take, and what happened during that process?
This was the meetings, again, between the street performers in 1980 that we're talking about now. Maybe a similar process is about to take place with the drummers, but what we're talking about right now is... In 1980, when there was a proposal to ban street performing in Santa Cruz, well, first we called a meeting of street performers. The issue was hot. It was in the newspapers, and the performers felt threatened, and lots of them showed up. It turned out to be kind of fun. So we had a number of them. We did. It turned into, you know, a core group who talked daily, but a number of meetings that always had good attendance. We had the Loudon Nelson Center over and over. We got together, and in that process, we would all just kind of talk, and then, you know, I'd give them a report on the latest thing that happened, because they'd look at me as their spokesperson. And so I would be meeting with some of the downtown merchants, and then the merchants appointed somebody to meet with me.
And let me interrupt you for a moment. Whoops. Do you intend a... Ooh, we got a feedback here. Do you intend a similar role in this process? Do you intend to go and talk to the residents and the I don't know, other people who might be bothered by the drums directly too?
But my intent is not important here right now. That would be my intent if I'm called upon by the group of drummers that are going to meet on May 1st.
If they are interested in having you do that,
it's important that they understand that. I mean, this is what's happened so far. I mean, that some council members had indicated that they would be interested in having me. It might well be that the drummers think, well, hey, why do we want somebody the council wants?
Right.
You know, the council was about to do this thing to them.
Now, this process of the street performers' guidelines, I'm sorry to catch up because I'm pressing on with this, but you say it took place over a number of meetings, so you must have had many months rather than just 1 month to deal with the issue. So in a certain sense, you're in a much more crisis-ridden, well, I don't know if it's crisis-ridden, it's not really a crisis except as created, but your time pressure is much heavier here, right?
You know, that's literally true, that last statement. My time pressure is very heavy here right now. I have a meeting with Arthur Hull and a couple of drummers in 8 minutes in another part of town. So that's also true right now. But let me say, in answer to your question, yes, we're being asked to come up with a proposal in 30 days. It might well be that there's a further delay if it's needed. I'm hoping that that's not the case. I'm hoping the truth is, well, we've had some practice at this, you know, putting together the street performers guidelines, but there was so little dispute in this one. There was a lot more when we were putting together the street performers guidelines. But you listened to a number of those drummers at that council meeting, and over, they were saying the same thing. The specifics is all we really need to deal with right now. I mean, the question was phrased beautifully at some point. Is it possible that the elders can come out of, in the center of the village, in the huts, can step out of their hut, address the musicians, and say, it's late, take it out into the jungle? And the result
very nice,
can be some kind of disrespect for the elders. Come on, this is clearly what's going on. And the drummers know that, I think, when they see it in that light. I don't think there is any opposition. Even in the newspaper today, when they talked about it, they said something about the disrespectful drummers are the ones that don't even care. And I don't think they've yet been addressed in this light.
You cautioned about avoiding a distinction between the good drummers and the bad drummers.
I don't think there should be any distinction at all. If you make a distinction like that, what you're saying is, okay, listen, all the good drummers are going to obey the rules. Well, all the good drummers are already obeying the rules. That's, you know, and what are the others? Are the bad drummers? There aren't. What we need to do is embrace everybody in one community, the drumming community. It exists.
Mm-hmm.
And if we put somebody outside of that community, what do we want? We want outlaws who don't follow the guidelines. That's the plan.
Uh-huh.
We are this one group. Now, can this one group, that might mean that the larger group that says, listen, I never drummed downtown, who doesn't understand the problems of drumming downtown? Some of the drummers downtown are trying to make some coin. That's why it's more important to them to be drumming at night. Some of the drummers would be willing perhaps to just, well, let's just give up the whole downtown. So, well, what good does that do for the guy who's trying to make some coin downtown? So among themselves, they have to come up with, you know, something that really will embrace all of them. Robert, I got to run.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much.
All right. You've been listening to Tom Noddy, who's a local street performer. Actually, he's more of an international performer now, and he doesn't perform on the streets. He does bubble acts for such shows as the Johnny Carson Show, and it was a Johnny Carson Show, and now flies to other places. But he's also deeply concerned with events here in Santa Cruz, as you can hear, and he will be meeting with drummers on May 1st at the Loudon Nelson Auditorium. And if you want to leave a message and get in touch with him, leave a message with me at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, if you're a drummer or a non-drummer or just an interested person, 423-4833, and I'll get you in touch with him to talk to him about this issue if you think he has something you can add to it. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in number for the show is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. We interrupted our interview with Catherine Byers on the issues around seizure of blankets at the City Hall sleepout, the drumming vote in City Council, and other civil rights for the poor concerns. And we're going to return to that interview. So let's join that one in progress.
A couple more, and I realize it's Sunday morning, but I'm going to try to get you to bear with me, is the jewelry, well, I call it the jewelry issue. It's actually non-commercial sales.
Right.
Now, one of the concerns merchants who are not, are people who are poor, who put out their wares on the street downtown have had, is being hassled by police for displaying their wares for donation. And that is, I understand it, Sergeant Crane, been illegal for some time. Yet, this is one of the ways people have and indeed they've been looking for years for some kind of an artist's area. Can you hold for just a moment? Hang on. Hello? Catherine?
Yeah.
Johnson says hello.
Oh, okay.
So our concern is this ban on non-commercial, not just sales, but display for donation has now been expanded, at least in a first reading of the ordinance, to different areas of the town.
Right.
That was by a 5-1 vote, as I understand it.
Yeah, I don't remember the vote.
But who was the dissenting vote? You voted in favor of that, didn't
you? Yeah, I did. I don't remember the vote. I
think it was Kennedy who voted against it. At least I think he spoke against it. But again, I'm not sure.
No,
I thought you might have a recollection.
I'm not either.
Okay, well, we're both a little bit. I don't remember that.
I don't remember.
Do you know much about what's happening with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and the church situation for people who need legal places to sleep at night in the absence of winter shelter armory or a modification of the camping ban? And also, I'm going to ask you about that as well. But in terms of immediate shelter, how many churches are open in terms of people being able to drive up and, in some extent, camp on their property?
I don't have.
I've heard it's happening at Holy Cross. I've heard it's happening at Garfield Park.
I've heard the same thing, and that's secondhand. I don't know any more than that.
Now, what about Celia Scott's proposal to modify the camping ban, or at least re-examine it via the staff? I know it has been proposed a rather mild change would be to strike sleeping and covering up with blankets, and to redefine camping as having to do with having a tent or camping equipment, and then possibly to restrict it to certain areas of the city. Would you favor such a change?
I'd have to give it, I can't say off right now whether I would or not. I probably would,
mm-hmm.
but it takes some real thinking and some real look at the language. And I just haven't given myself the pleasure of doing that or the time to do that because there isn't support for it.
Well, you do have supposedly 3 votes.
I'm not sure.
You think that Kennedy might not be a vote?
Well, I don't know just what it all means, but if in fact there is not... I am totally convinced would be a fourth vote on this. I really don't. So it's not worth my even, giving it any more time on it.
Another proposal that's come up has been for the city to emulate the county and take its camping law, which is in essence...
Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
You're familiar with it. There's no camping...
It's not going to happen, Robert. It's just nothing is going to happen about our camping ordinance.
Right. What I'm talking to is I'm talking to you in your opinion, Catherine. I'm more concerned with you as an individual and as a person that has some political savvy and also some influence in the councils of power and in the community.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you've been around here. How long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
67.
Since 67. So you were around when the camping ban was passed in 1978.
Yeah, I guess I certainly was, but I had no knowledge of it or involvement.
Did you know Charlotte Melville?
Yes, I know Charlotte.
You still know her?
I know her.
Did you know that she was the only individual to ever vote against the camping ban?
Is that right?
Yeah, she voted against it in 1978 on the first reading. I talked to her a couple days ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
She might give you some aid and comfort in your lonely struggle here.
Yeah. She's great.
What about CPRB? We have John Malcolm, a Citizens Police Review Board member who has resigned because he feels the board is, at least this is my interpretation, ineffectual and also doesn't support its members against essentially a fawning attitude towards the police chief, whose new attempt is to sort of turn complaints into inquiries and, essentially degrade the power of the board. That's how I interpret Chief Belcher's approach. I'm not even going to comment on his blanket activities, which I've already commented on before, but do we have a new member coming down the pike on the CPRB, as far as you know, from Celia?
Well, I would hope the next council meeting, which is, May 9th, and we have another resignation now. Mary Beth Campbell's appointee has resigned.
And that's
Phyllis Tressler.
That's too bad. Phyllis is a former police officer, but quite understanding of the rights of people who are concerned about abuses.
No, I have. I think the board itself has done great work. I think it's been very clear just by looking at their annual report. You know how they.
Can you give me some idea of the great work they've done for the people who think that they haven't done anything?
Well, I just look at the statistics, and you know they're not always in agreement. It looks like they've been extremely objective, and. In just looking at the amount of work they have done in this time, which is not an easy thing, setting up a whole new commission. I haven't had a chance to talk to John, and I do want, and I feel bad because I think he probably was a good member, and he was in a very difficult position right from the beginning. But I would hope that, he and I have been trying to talk, and I know he gave me the courtesy and really wanted to talk to me before I received a letter on his resignation, and we just haven't had a minute.
Didn't have.
And for those who are interested, there will be a meeting of the Outreach Committee of the Citizens Police Review Board today at 5:30, I believe, at the Citizens Police Review Board offices at 905, or is it 906, Cedar Street. It's in the building on the corner of Cedar, right across from the Santa Cruz Hotel. So if you want to be, want to check out that subcommittee, you can go down there today, Monday, the 29th of April. There's also a meeting on May 1st of the, it's not the Outreach Committee, it's the Complaint Tracking Subcommittee. If you want to go to the Complaint Tracking Subcommittee, I believe that is around noon. And unfortunately, I don't have that information exactly with me, but for those who want information about when the meeting of the Citizens Police Review Board subcommittees specifically is, you can give a call to the Citizens Police Review Board at 426-3262. We have an incoming call ourselves.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, how's it going?
Not bad. Who's?
Oh, my name's Bruce.
Hey, Bruce.
First-time caller, long-time listener.
Oh, great. We could use a few first-time callers.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, spread the word. It's great to have a free-ranging, politically oriented station rather than the doctrinaire type that's on your competitors.
Yeah, well, that's. We hope that continues because, as you may know, Free Radio Berkeley is under legal attack, and we will suffer the adverse consequences that they suffer if the court decision in the federal district court comes down against them, and we're going to be learning about that in the next few weeks.
Yeah, it's I'm not too confident about it. I don't know why, but efficient use of the airwaves seems to have been decided to be one giant radio station would be the most efficient, according to these corporate people. They don't see efficiency as being a multitude of small variety, small nodes of variety all over the place.
No, they don't see, period, I think.
Much better, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually called about the... I was traveling in the car listening to the beginning of the... the return of the interview with Ms. Byers, and also the drumming ordinance. The subject when you were talking to Ms. Byers was the display of jewelry. It seems linked in a subtle way to the drumming ordinance, in that it seems that if there's a problem in one locality in the city or the county, the move suddenly becomes to ban it countywide. If somebody doesn't like a person sleeping in their front doorstep, which a person would, you know, understandably be concerned about a person sleeping in their front, doorstep or on their yard, the move then is nobody can sleep anywhere, any place, any time. If a jeweler is worried about a person outside selling jewelry, it becomes no person selling anything can set up anywhere. If someone drums inappropriately and isn't respectful of the people close by, it becomes nobody can drum anywhere in the county.
Mm-hmm.
And that's disturbing. I used to have kind of a respect for some of the people who are on the council, the board, and I kind of confuse the city council
the
with
city
the board sometimes.
Council is the city, and of course that's the citywide drumming law, and the Board of Supervisors, they're the folks who give us the countywide marijuana helicopters.
Right, which that's something I don't understand. We take 250,000, sure, to bust the people, but then we spend millions to prosecute and incarcerate people at the expense of room for far more serious and dangerous people who are, you know, not there's now not enough room in the criminal justice system to actually protect the community.
Well, I think Pat Buchanan had it right when he talked about a culture war. That's what we got going here.
Oh yeah, and that's always been the most important thing. The culture that actually enjoys crime movies and violence movies, because it crime and violence movies kind of support the idea that property and owning things is the most important thing. And so violent criminals who seize property are kind of under... They can't figure it out. It's scary. It strikes at the very heart of their belief system. And if you're sitting around growing a plant and peaceably smoking it, why, that's the most scary thing that they can think of.
Now, Bruce, you yourself had a lot of experience with poverty. Have you been poor and homeless and things of this sort?
Actually, yeah, I have.
I'd like you to consider possibly being a guest on the show. You sound very well-spoken. You sound like you've been through a number of different classes, and I think one of the problems is that our mayor, for instance, though he may have economic sympathies with... socialism, for instance, calls himself a socialist, Mayor Rodkin does, doesn't have any understanding or sympathy with people in different classes.
Oh, yeah, it's kind of like the originator of the socialist system. Marx and Engels were middle class, actually upper middle class, people living off their family's wealth. They had no actual understanding of what poor people go through. And when their classification systems became a little bit outmoded, the people enforcing the theories became doctrinaire and authoritarian. I'm thinking of, you know, the Leninist, Stalinist folks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just goes to show what happens when people who aren't really living the life are trying to, you know, from on high, lay down how people should be. And I think maybe Mike Gorotkin might be part of that same pathology.
Power corrupts and absolute power corrupts, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, although I must say that I strongly supported him teaching that class, communication as analysis or whatever it was up at UC,
mm-hmm.
which he did for free and was the largest, most popular class on campus. It analyzed the way the media, you know, manipulates the audience.
You know, and Mike Rodkin has a very good reputation at the university, even among those who oppose his position on the sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm.
Laura, who has a show on Free Radio Santa Cruz on Mondays at 2, in fact, is planning a debate between Mike Rodkin and myself, which should be happening Monday, May 6th, if I'm not in jail.
Battle of the Beards, huh?
I guess so, yeah, although mine is longer than his. Keep that in mind.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Bruce, what I'd like you to do, if you're willing, because I've got to kind of cut you off pretty quick.
Sure.
Because I want to finish this buyer's interview, is give me a call at 423-HUFF.
Okay.
My apologies for the feedback, everybody. I'm not quite sure how to end it.
Give
me a call at
423-HUFF.
Yeah, we need a technician. We need lots of things. Give me a call, and maybe we can actually arrange to have you on the air as a guest.
Was that 425-HUFF?
423.
I'm sorry.
That's all right. 423-4833 or 423-HUFF.
Okay.
And I'll talk to you then, and maybe we can schedule you for a longer period of time.
Sure.
All right.
Oh, and
anything else
closing,
you wanted to say?
I'd like to urge, I don't know, am I on the air right now?
Yes, you are.
Oh, I'd like to urge everybody, if they're not listening to the radio and they're not outside in the world living life the way they should, watch Channel 71 and 72, which is free community TV.
Well, actually, there's someone here who wants to commend you for that. There's a Becky Johnson, or Beggarbacker Becky, as I call her.
Oh, hey, Becky, it's Bruce.
Hello, Bruce.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. And thanks for that plug for Channel 71. In fact,
it's self-serving. I'm the Bruce that does the community in action show.
Wonderful. Yeah, so watch my show, Club Cruise. It comes on 7 to 7:30 on Tuesday nights.
Oh, yeah, I will. My show is also on Tuesday nights and Thursday nights, 5:30 in the evening, as well as 6 days a week at 10:30 in the morning.
Okay, well, hopefully everyone will have written this down on their calendars so they don't miss all this good stuff that's happening.
Yeah, it's on the radio, 96.3, and on TV, it's 71 and 72. Unfortunately, you have to subscribe to TCI, the corporate, conservative giant, but...
Thanks for calling, Bruce.
I'll sign off so you guys can get back to beers. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And you have been listening, of course, and are listening, as Bruce pointed out, to 96.3 FM, Free Radio, Santa Cruz. Call-in number is 427-3772. Alternate host is Beggarbacker Becky Johnson, who may indeed be taking the show here. She hates it when I use that name, as does everyone, of course. But, hey, I am the most irritating man in Santa Cruz. Just ask the Metro Santa Cruz. They knighted me, they crowned me, and here I am. So, Becky, do you have any real quick reports for us before we finish the Catherine Byers interview? And if nobody comes in at noon, we'll continue. We got tapes galore, but I suspect we're going to be cut off at noon. So, got anything interesting for us about the latest meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which you were either a board member, an expatriate, a guest? We're not sure what your status is. After you supported the rights of the campers at the campground, after you supported the rights of activists to come to the board's meetings of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is the monopoly service provider in Santa Cruz, the group that closed the only legal campground and is setting up its community house project, a $600 plus million project, essentially, that is run for 20 to 40 people that displaces over 200 people at the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which they closed down in violation of a contract against the campers that they made. I'm sorry, I got to get it all in because nobody else does. And it's behind part of our shelter crisis now. You went to the last board meeting, and what happened there?
Bringing up our CD past. Yes, I am a board member of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and I did go to the last meeting, and I don't really have time to go into all the issues that we covered in that meeting, but I would like to share what the latest state regarding Ray McMinn. Ray McMinn is still in Virginia. He was, we attempted to have him paroled to...
Ray McMinn, by the way, is he not the... A former only homeless person on the board. You've lost your other homeless person, John Hamilton, not the John Hamilton who's the Dread Master, Johnny Dread, but another John Hamilton. But Ray McMinn was jailed and essentially kidnapped to Virginia by the parole department to continue serving out a, 30-year sentence for stealing $8 in 1971 or some such thing?
26 years ago, he stole $8 from a guy that he knew and had an argument with earlier in the day, no one was injured, and he was sentenced to 40 years in state prison in Virginia.
And is still there as we speak.
He had been released on parole after 15 years in the slammer and made his way to Santa Cruz, where he became an integral part of the Homeless Garden Project here. And last July, he was incarcerated again, and they found an ancient, dusty old parole violation from Virginia.
Was that a camping van ticket they got him on here in Santa Cruz County by chance?
He tells me that he racked up a few camping van tickets in his day.
Hey, good work, Chief Belcher. You sent another one to Virginia out of the state.
He also then had spent many a night in the Poganip, camping by the river, and had a campsite set up there.
But he was probably one of those good campers that Mike Rotkin, the mayor, assures us never get arrested, hide successfully from the police, or are ignored by them, right?
Well, he was semi-successful. He had hit out for a couple months in one spot, and but then he was busted and everything confiscated and
confiscated. But wait, Mayor Rotkin assures us that people who aren't protesters in front of City Hall don't have their belongings and blankets confiscated. How can this be?
There were confiscations that were going back then, and I believe these confiscations are still ongoing.
Is this some sort of religious belief, or do you have some actual evidence to this?
Well, it depends on who you ask now. If you ask, I've heard a rumor that Steve Belcher was saying that they only had two blankets confiscated.
Actually, that's been cleared up. The city manager apparently has told us, so this is what I hear from the people at the protest, that it wasn't that two blankets were confiscated, it's that two blankets have been accepted in evidence by the city attorney. So they actually have like more than 60 blankets, we presume, maybe more than 70 now, wrapped up, locked up, and piled up in the storage chambers or the catacombs of the police department.
I see. 58 don't count.
Well, they haven't counted them yet because
they
weren't booked into evidence in terms of pending cases, I guess. Mm-hmm. By the way, tomorrow, April 30th, there is a huge arraignment in court for those involved in the sleeping ban, including misdemeanor sleeping cases. The first in Santa Cruz history will begin to work their way through the courts. J.J. Hamlin is the public defender. Defendants include Sean Alimi, Robert Flory, Dan Hopkins, I believe Pat Ring. Hey, there's a whole bunch of folks who are facing 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, just as I was when I was facing a jury and a judge with my public defender in San Francisco. I was facing it for serving food for the homeless. They'll be facing it for sleeping outside at night twice within 48 hours. Again, Becky, continue your interrupted report on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, but I'm about to cut you off because I've got to finish this Catherine Byers tape.
It can't be done in the time period allotted.
We're talking about Ray McMinn, who is still stuck in Virginia and because he's been having trouble getting somebody to stay with, so his sister's offered a place for him, I believe, or his mother or something.
New plan is we're petitioning for him to be paroled to Santa Clara County, where he has a sister who's willing to take him in. So we're asking for the public support to send all your cards and letters to the Santa Clara County State Parole Office. The phone number there is 277-1821. And for those of you smart enough out there to have faxes, the fax number, 277-1830.
And if you didn't get that number and you really are interested later in helping Ray, give me a call at 423-HUFF, an easier number to remember, and I will get that number to you, unless I'm in jail, in which case you can call me in the San Bruno County jail. Well, probably not. We'll find another way, because on Friday, I think, Becky, you've agreed to take this show. I will be away. I will be up in San Francisco meeting my fate in the Hall of Justice, as they whimsically call it up there. The Hall of Justice. Anything else you want to report on this issue or any other issue around the Citizens Committee for the Homeless?
Actually, I'd like to hear the rest of that Catherine Byers interview.
All right, let's go for the Byers interview, and let's hope we get another hour, because if anybody sees the next talk show host kidnap her on the streets and stop her from coming in. Here we go.
There's been a lot of discussion about the sleeping ban with Mayor Rotkin, a lot of interviewing, a lot of back and forth, and there's an upcoming debate on Laura's show. Laura's a professor of feminism or an instructor up at UCSC, and she was having a show on that Monday, May 6th, where I'm going to have a long debate with Mayor Rotkin for 2 hours on the issue. One of the points that Mayor Rotkin makes is he feels that making it legal for human beings to sleep at night in Santa Cruz would result in a massive influx of people to Santa Cruz. My experience as a homeless activist in Santa Barbara, when Santa Barbara between 1986 and 89 abolished its camping ban, at least as far as sleeping went, there was no such influx. Well, what do you think? Do you have any sense of this?
I never can buy that argument that, the more we do, the hundreds are going to roll into town and be here. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I think there's a certain percent that people that move up and down the coast, and that's always true. But no, I don't see that big problem. I mean, if we still wouldn't allow people just to
sleep in the streets.
In the streets and private property.
Right.
No, I just don't. you know, none of us will ever know, but I never felt that that was...
Well, don't be so negative. We might know sooner than you think.
On this, but no, I don't see why we should think or make that assumption. I mean, there's all kinds of places that people can go now. Communities that don't have this law.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be in the county.
What are your feelings about opening up an area downtown, closing off streets so there can be a larger pedestrian access, and also establishing open spaces, as I believe Scott Kennedy has suggested, for park areas? That is one reason, I suppose, the drummers have suggested that people are drumming on the streets because there are no downtown parks in that area. Any thoughts on that subject?
Well, I'm very supportive of the city having a public space downtown. I think it's something that I certainly talked a lot about when we did the downtown recovery plan, and it was clear it wasn't going to happen then, and I think that's what Scott said as well. That wasn't the time, but maybe now it is. Communities all over have wonderful public squares, so hopefully we can move on that. I'm very supportive of that.
Anything happening for the next city council meeting that you're aware of that you think we might be interested in?
Oh, it's May 9th. I don't even know. No, I'm afraid I don't know, but I mean, it's too soon.
And finally, there's always the constant argument that, gosh, Santa Cruz, if it lessened its sleeping restrictions, actually adopted a human face to the right of people to sleep at night, not anywhere and everywhere, but somewhere, that they would be, you know, putting themselves in a situation where no other city does this and so forth. And so there's been a proposal that a solution to this might be some kind of initiative at the city council level to get a countywide, statewide, or tri-county set of standards whereby there would be rights for people to sleep in certain, you know, in different cities, not in terms of campgrounds, but in terms of recognizing a fundamental human right to sleep. Would you be in favor of introducing into city council a measure calling for communications to, say, bodies that involve joint city action? If you follow what I mean, or statewide action. In other words, one of the main concerns of critics of changing the law has always been, if we do it here alone, we will put ourselves in a uniquely desirable position. That why people would come to sleep, you know, outside, you know, in uncomfortable circumstances is not clear. So the solution to this may be to have a number of jurisdictions agreeing to changes at the same time. What's your thought on that?
Well, I think I would very much like to see us sit down with all the other jurisdictions and talk about many of the issues and problems surrounding the people who do not have homes or a safe place to sleep. What would ever come out of that, I'm not really sure, but I think I know the mayor's select committee at one time or another has thought about having that on their agenda. That's when the mayors of all the cities get together. I think they get together every other month.
Mm-hmm. Would you be interested in getting the council to formally take some action to try to request?
It sounds good. I just can't respond quickly off the top of my head. But mm-hmm. I'm always would be interested in certainly sharing what I say is our load. You know, we do a lot. There's no doubt about it. And to get the other communities to help us, and that became clear as we really talked. Over the putting the homeless in the campground. I mean, it was really clear that we, we were trying to do something.
What about the campground? We've heard the open air shelter subcommittee has come up with no places, and parks program has been derailed by the bigoted response of the community in the state park system, and also the failure of a number of people to use the program. What's cooking you? We hear all this. Oh, we're looking for solutions. Where are you looking for solutions?
Well, right now I'm nothing. It's just. For me, it's a period where I'm not doing much at all on this. Not to say that we won't pick it up, or I won't pick it up again, but anyway, nothing's happening right now.
And finally, and this is the final question since it's your Sunday morning, and you should be out at perhaps Zachary's having some nice omelet or something. Mike Reckin has said that he goes door to door, he talks to the electorate, he's in touch with all the people, or many of the people, and his view is that there's only a small number of people in Santa Cruz who support a modification of the law that would allow people to sleep at night after 11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Is that your reading of the situation? That only a few people in the university and a few people downtown support that? Do you think that there would be a support a change in the sleeping ban so that there could be a right of people to sleep somewhere at night? In other words, he's saying that the vast majority of the community would like to make sure that people don't sleep after 11 o'clock at night.
Outside. I've probably done as much walking as anyone election time, and
I don't have any handle on that. It never came up. It was never an issue. It's never talked to, for me at least, wasn't talked
about. Because Rutkin said every time he brought up issues, other people said, oh, no, homelessness and having all these homeless people around is our major problem because people flock to town to use the social services. They didn't say that to you, in other words.
No, I never felt that.
So you're getting a different report both on the drumming and on the homelessness situation than Mike. Maybe the two of you should kind of get together and compare notes.
Well, you know, things come and go. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'm trying to think, what did I have when I was mayor? I probably had, you know, I'm getting, you know, 3 calls a day about the smell of the sewer with our treatment plant. You know, so it comes and goes. You know, that's what I did when I was mayor, and now Mike has run into this. That's not unusual that things, you know.
And meanwhile, we continue to smell the stench of injustice, but that's another story.
You're right.
Yeah. Well, listen, thank you, Catherine. Anything you want to say to the Radio Santa Cruz audience before you go?
Did you tape this?
Yeah, it's taped.
Oh.
It'll be going out tomorrow morning between 10 and 12.
No, nothing. Always good to talk to you, Robert.
Appreciate it.
Don't mind you calling, so give me a call.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, it's April 29th, and I'm...
That was Catherine Byers, city council person, who gave us that lengthy interview. I have been listening to it on and off. I occasionally will interrupt the show, the tapes I'm playing in order to make commentary. I tend to be perhaps overly diplomatic with Catherine because for the years she's been one of the few council members that's been continually accessible to a point. To me, and I tend to perhaps value that too highly, just as I've criticized Citizens Committee for the Homeless board member Becky Johnson for being overly submissive or pleasant or diplomatic with, let's say...
I'm nice to Paul Lee and Daryl Darling.
Say that again, I'm sorry?
I said I'm nice to Paul Lee and Daryl Darling, and that pisses you off.
No, it's not that you're nice. It's, for instance, that the last board meeting of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, you took no opportunity to bring up the fact that what were major issues for you in previous board meetings, that they have censored their meetings in terms of not allowing you or anyone else to record them, that they're not allowing videoings anymore, that they have excluded me under threat of arrest, and presumably could exclude whoever they want in violation of, if not the Brown Act, at least the basic so-called open policy they should have. That they're not bringing up discussions of the campground, which is the major crisis in Santa Cruz at this time. All these issues which are on the front burner, which are on your front burner, because of this diplomatic desire you have to maintain good communications with Paul Lee and be a part of the process on the CCH board, suddenly there's a great silence from you on these issues at the CCH board. Plus, I might add the fact that there's no appeal process for the ISSP program, so individuals who are thrown out of the program have nowhere to go and no one to appeal to, in spite of the fact that they're the monopoly service providers. I've been pressing you and the CCH board to do something about this since October, and nothing, I repeat, nothing has been done. That's the basis of my irritation. Becky, you can be as pleasant as you like to Paul Lee. I got no problem with that.
And a wonderful irritated tone comes across in, too.
Well, this is an incoming call to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Hi there.
About Ray McMinn, this is really sad. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless gave Ray McMinn and a couple other people several acres up near Long's Marine to begin the first after the model, the so-called model of the homeless garden, into which they spend $250,000 to maintain a small employment program in the homeless. And they gave Ray that. They made a $10,000 video that they showed on 71 and showed him out there getting it going and getting that 2 acres in production. And this, what we're seeing, is the political retaliation of the Arthur Danner County DA and the State Attorney General Dan Lundgren in even deporting this person, who is much more valuable to us, on 2 acres in the film he was tending cabbages, than having to pay the $22,000 a year to keep him in jail for something that he did 16 years ago?
Well, it's kind of nuts any way you look at it. Hi, Chris.
Yeah, that the CCH does not have the political power, given Daryl Darling's political connections. His son, deceased, is formerly speechwriter for the number 2 man in the Commerce Department, and that they don't have the pull to get somebody like Ray McMinn out.
Yeah, it's not just Daryl Darling and Paul Lee who are working on it, but also we have a couple of city council people, Celia Scott and Scott Kennedy, who are working on Ray's behalf. We've had several ministers writing letters and making phone calls and sending faxes. It just doesn't seem to matter. This, I think the fault actually lies at the core of our prison system, which just seems to be voracious in its desire to suck people in into the cogwheels, and I don't understand.
Self-perpetuating employment system for the so-called tough-on-crime crowd.
It's a growth industry.
But half of the people in prison in this country are in there for nothing more harmful than trying to kill themselves with addictive substances. This, in my book, is not a crime.
Ray hasn't committed a new crime in 26 years. And the crime that he committed back in 1970, had that same crime been committed today and gone through the courts, no way would he have gotten 40 years in state prison for stealing $8.
The gun was empty?
He used an unloaded gun.
He did 14 years?
And it was unplanned.
Now, we had somebody who was running against John Butts pull a fake gun on a very poorly attended Board of Supervisors meeting, and he's up on a misdemeanor. Apparently, he didn't ask the supervisors for $8. Otherwise, he would have done 14 years. I mean, the punishment has to fit the crime. There's nobody dead on the ground, nobody maimed or injured. It was $8 over a silly argument 20 years ago. Let it go. A phone call from Senator Mellish to the governor of Virginia should be enough. If they need to go to the Dan Lundgren to get an opinion about whether...
Let me interrupt you, Chris, because let me tell you, when we applied, the State Parole Board in Virginia ruled that Ray was totally rehabilitated, and they've agreed to release him on parole. This was January 30th that they made this ruling. That's when we started the paperwork going to have his parole transferred to Santa Cruz County. This took months and months to accomplish, and the parole board agent investigated the situation and denied Ray parole. And the reasons he denied him parole was that he didn't have a 40-hour-a-week, $8 an hour or more job waiting for him, even though he did have a job waiting for him at
That's
the Homeless Garden Project.
Illegal.
And that he doesn't have a family member living in Santa Cruz County.
Right. That's absolutely illegal that somebody is unemployed. He does have a job. Maybe it's not eight an hour. It's whatever
not
he can get that land to produce out there near Longs, and there's quite a bit of it.
And so we have taken a new tact, and that is to request his parole be transferred to Santa Clara County, where he does have a sister that lives. So that's where we're at right now. But here it is. You know, it's the end of April. They agreed to release him end of January. He's been incarcerated since last July. You know, the huge expense to the taxpayers, the huge inconvenience to Ray, the loss of, you know, the work that he was doing at the Homeless Garden Project, he has not been replaced. You know, they're limping along without him.
And the land out there is gone to seed. It's now, there's nobody like, you need somebody like Ray, who's been in four or five or since the Homeless Garden started, who has all that experience, and then when he's just ready to do it, to get two or three other people with him organized to do the same thing on another couple acres, they grab him and throw him in jail. This is
Ray is also, you know, has had experience with the ISSP as well as the Homeless Garden Project, and I talked to him about the campground issue, and that, you know, and he's totally in favor of Santa Cruz setting up a campground for homeless people, exclusively for camp. And he has agreed that if he comes back, he would be willing to be one of the people that would manage such a campground. And yet, you know, with all of this, we can't get Ray out.
They have some expectation that 2,000 people would come and camp on the pogo, which would be fine. I'd like to see it at that number of crowd if they did. And of those 2,000, only about 10%, 8% might be homeless.
Who are
I don't think 2,000 will
come.
Who are
they?
If we allow 2 million to come into this area, I mean, I don't think this the draw should be the boardwalk. I think the boardwalk should be raised. Concertina wire should be surrounded. And the ground there should be poisoned. We can't afford to have this much of disturbing the peace and all this traffic and noise just because somebody wants to go throw balls at a milk carton. That's too much, and that's not the kind of person we want to come. We want the kind of person who's going to come to the symphony, who's going to come to the shops, some kind of enterprise other than...
Yeah, gentrification. Go.
The gravity ride down there. I know it's been there since 1880 or something, but it doesn't need to be there, and it does appear to attract these noisy, rude,
litter,
well-behaved...
all the litter, the beer bottles, oh my God, and the drug use, it's appalling. All these tourists, I tell you, inundating our city weekend after weekend.
It's forced to rent the
I think we need an ordinance preventing tourists from coming to Santa Cruz. Yeah, maybe we should bring it up to the city council. You know, their rude behavior, the way they dress.
It's these noisy middle-class people that are inundating the earth. It's ruining it for the rest of us. We have to somehow figure out how to stop the attraction.
And they're polluting cars, you know.
That type of attraction. Anyway, thank you.
Thanks for calling,
Bye.
Chris.
And that was Crossroads' Chris Brazda. Thanks, Chris. As usual, you got ideas that nobody else has, or at least that nobody else expresses. Well, it's 12:03. We have our next talk show host should be coming in shortly. He came in actually and left and gave us a few extra moments to use. I want to remind you that Community House will be having its groundbreaking ceremonies on May 1st. And when's that going to happen, Becky? This is, of course, the Trailers Not Trolls project that I have so long railed against. I don't think I'm even going to bother to go down there and throw tomatoes. I think I've tried to illuminate the situation on the radio and before the city council and in my writings. But, Becky, why don't you tell us a little something about that? Where is Community House at the moment? And for those who don't know, what is Community House?
The groundbreaking is Wednesday, May 1st. I do not have the time of day. I think it's about 10 in the morning.
Maybe it's a state secret. Who knows?
I left the flyer back at home.
Maybe you can call in on tomorrow at some point and let our Free Radio Santa Cruz audience know, just when to bring their sleeping bags down. After all, if the ground's going to be broken, maybe it's time to break in some of those sleeping bags and use an area that was promised to the homeless throughout the winter. And since they essentially owe the homeless 3 months, maybe they can use those 3 months now.
Okay. Well, you heard it from him.
Thank you for that courageous stand, Becky.
Yes. Actually, I did discuss with the Citizens Committee for Homeless about the camping ban law itself, and got a completely open reception from virtually every member of CCH, as far as I could tell.
Did you ask them if they would support the City Hall sleep out and other demonstrations that are actually pressing for changing the sleeping ban?
Got me there.
Uh-huh. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. I just had to ask that rather important question. Yeah, Citizens Committee for the Homeless has a history of actually supporting changes in the sleeping ban, not in any active way, but Paige Smith wrote an editorial, a lengthy one in 1987 on the Santa Cruz Sentinel, suggesting the camping ban, as it's also called, be eliminated. Sorry?
Should I read this?
Oh, yeah. Becky has something she's going to read. But also in 1989, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless actually supported ending the camping ban at one of their meetings. The problem with CCH is that they don't support demonstrations to end the sleeping ban because, of course, their cozy ties with the city council and the bureaucratic agencies and the fact that they're always hungry for funding and they don't want to jeopardize their funding sources. So you might be able to get a perfunctory note now and then, but to support those who are actually doing the major share of bringing the issue to public attention, no. In fact, they'd rather exclude those people, particularly.
You know, it's always a problem when you're trying to influence the same people that you're also coming to and asking to act on your behalf or to loosen up funds. And I think the Citizens Committee for the Homeless finds themselves in that
Terrible dilemma.
Rock in a hard place time and time again.
Well, why don't they call themselves the Citizens Committee to raise money for bureaucrats who might kind of occasionally sort of want to help the homeless rather than the Citizens Committee for the homeless? I mean, let's be real here, shall we?
There's some harsh words there.
Yeah, well, I mean, no, I think individuals who put themselves out as these great advocates for the homeless should be honest enough to, you can't expect them to be honest, but we have to be realistic enough to call a spade, a hypocrite, and a group that closes down the only legal campground in favor of a multi-million dollar trailer project, just that, a bunch of, poverty pimps?
Now, Citizens Committee for the Homeless is totally in favor of a campground for homeless people
somewhere else
other than Coral
Street. Not in my backyard or what? I mean, come on, they had a campground. They closed it down.
Paulie said that his number one choice is Sycamore Grove, which is also in our backyard.
Yeah, well, actually, Sycamore Grove is a much better choice than the Coral Street Open Air Shelter. But Paulie, actually, as I understand it, has oodles of bucks. Is that accurate?
He is a wealthy person, yes.
Yeah, well, I mean, presumably if he really were serious about getting a campground together, you know, he could buy one. I mean, let's get real. You know, or he could, you know, he's always trying. Now, I know the feeling of, you know, one individual with some money, you know, not wanting other people to leave him all alone, you know, just trying to do the whole thing by himself. But,
well, I have nothing against that. If Paulie wants to buy a campground for the homeless people, I'm all in favor of it.
I personally would be very impressed if Paulie would buy. I would even agree not to even go on his campground. if he's afraid I'm going to come over there and bother him, I will promise him, you buy a campground,
Paul. Give him that tempting choice, Robert.
I will stay away from your campground. Just get a campground, and as soon as possible. The point I'm making is that CCH is real fast with it's not even fast, but it will come up with occasional statements about the sleeping ban. But when it comes to doing something strong and positive, it's real hard to get them to do that. But maybe you have something you wanted to read, perhaps?
Yeah, I want to share with your listeners. This was a letter that I wrote to my fellow board members at Citizens Committee for Homeless. And, by the way, I am in favor of open meetings and the ability to record audio or video. At least at that one meeting a month.
Sort of like Catherine Byers is in favor of ending the camping ban, but feels that now is not the appropriate time to bring it up, that sort of thing.
Yeah, Catherine Byers is my role model in this here.
Go ahead, Becky.
Dear fellow board members, currently the city of Santa Cruz has one of the most restrictive camping ban laws on the books of any city in the nation. While many cities have laws which ban camping or sleeping, the law in Santa Cruz goes beyond all reason and unnecessarily punishes homeless persons who currently have few legal options. I propose we draft a proposal to request the Santa Cruz City Council modify the camping ban ordinance as follows. Reword the camping portion of the law to more clearly define camping as setting up a tent and cooking facilities. Currently, the police are using this portion of the law to criminalize homeless persons on a 24-hour basis by applying their own interpretations of the law to mean the use of a blanket, sleeping bag, or a piece of corrugated cardboard to mean camping with the intention to stay the night.
Let me interrupt you, Becky, by saying that actually Santa Barbara had such a change in its law from 1986 to 1989. So it's a workable suggestion that's actually been tried in a city twice as large as Santa Cruz.
It's been done before. Got that? Secondly, repeal the sleeping ban portion of the law.
Also done in Santa Barbara from 1986 to 1989, although sleeping was not allowed on the beaches or in the parks.
It's a short letter, Robert. If it is not a problem for people to be sleeping between 8:30 a.m. and 11 p.m., it should be of no concern whether a person is awake or asleep, regardless of the time of day. Certainly, our law enforcement officers have more important tasks to do than arrest people for sleeping. Thirdly, repeal the covering up with blankets or sleeping bags portion of the law. It is a human right to protect oneself from the elements, and it should be of no concern to law enforcement whether a person is wrapped in a blanket or sleeping bag. Even the Geneva Convention allows prisoners to keep protective clothing or coverings to protect against the elements. This portion should be completely repealed. These laws greatly impact homeless persons, criminalize behaviors which have no victims, and, in my opinion, constitute a violation of human rights. As community members concerned about the conditions homeless persons encounter, I ask we petition the City Council to modify these cruel laws. Sincerely, Becky Johnson.
Good letter, Becky. And if you have any comments on that letter, do give a call to 427-3772. And if we can, shall we say, hold down the next talk show host, I think we have him hogtied right outside the studio, we'll be able to continue the show. I should mention this is actually a very moderate proposal. I think something similar was coming out of Karen Gillette's Homeless Community Resource Center. The board of directors met in February, Becky, and I believe you and I and others spoke before that board at that time.
That's correct. We did.
Karen Gillette, I believe, in fact, maybe I'll try and give her a call right now to see if she has an update for us on that situation. Karen Gillette, of course, is the head of the executive director of the Homeless Community Resource Center, and perhaps we can get some information from her. We're having a
quick call here and seeing if she hasn't stepped out to lunch. Over there.
Commonly do in the noon hour.
Indeed.
Hi, you've reached Karen Gillette at the Homeless Community Resource.
Looks like we got a recording, so we're going to have to wait. Karen was interested in working with Celia Scott, and as I mentioned to you earlier, Celia and Catherine Byers presumably are meeting today with members of the Vigil and possibly other folks. I've heard, as I said, Charlie Phillips' secondhand information tells us that Barbara Riverwoman, who apparently doesn't like the Vigil too much, doesn't show up too much down there, and Sherry Connable, who last was heard telling Dan Hopkins that the Vigil was a failure when she declined to come into our forum on Wednesday night. I mention these things not out of any particular desire to assassinate the character of these two women, but because they have been leading homeless activists, so-called, in the media, much bruited about and given great words of praise by the City Council for their voucher program in the parks, which, incidentally, I have mocked, but have not opposed. And I opposed the council for indeed running with its tail between its legs once they got the first stench of bigotry, the first fart from the folks out of county who decided they didn't want those dirty, nasty, homeless baby killers over in the next campground. Mike Rotkin and the other council members, including Catherine Byers. I think Celia Scott was the only one who expressed any intention of standing firm to hold those 60 spots for the homeless in the state parks. They all ran, and they have no alternative. And as you heard from the Catherine Byers interview, the Open Air Shelter Subcommittee is a thing of the past, in spite of all their babble at the county, at the city level, at the city council meetings. There is no plan to find open-air shelter for homeless people. There is no plan for a campground. There is no next meeting for the subcommittee, for God's sake. All there is are about a dozen courageous people sleeping out every night in front of City Hall, now on the 60th night of their sleep out.
It seems so logical that we should either have a campground for homeless people where they can legally be, or that these camping ban laws should... Maybe a moratorium or so until there is a legal place would be reasonable. One thing I did not mention in my letter that I would also like to see would be amnesty for past victims of this camping ban law, especially the sleeping portion or the covering up with blankets portion.
And this is an amnesty, by the way, which is by no means without precedent. 38,200 matrix tickets, many of which had to do with just this. In fact, every sleeping ticket that was given under the Jordan administration that did not result in a court process that was already resolved has been dropped in the San Francisco area under the Brown's Let's End the Matrix proclamation. Now, Brown has not ended the matrix, as I repeatedly say, but at least he's given amnesty to past matrix tickets. I suggest all of you listeners, no matter how many times you've done this before or possibly haven't done it at all, however much you're nodding your heads in agreement with what I say, go pick up a phone and call Mayor Rotkin at 429-3540. That's again 429-3540 and tell him to do what Brown did and at least establish an amnesty for all tickets before March 1st. And the reason I say tickets before March 1st is because Rotkin has a thing about political protesters and is accusing us of trying to get amnesty for our political protest. Heavens forfend. 429-3540. Now we have an incoming call, and we also have an incoming talk show host.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
I don't see what the problem with locating another campsite is. We were told there would be one in the Pogonip. We don't need the Pogonip site or any of the county or city parks to use. Where the former site was River at Highway 1. Just walk across a catty corner across the Highway 1, and there's a perfect site there. There's 2 or 3 acres at least that's not going to be used for a shopping center for 2 or 3 years. And that's it. And that's the most obvious site because it's the closest to the existing showers and bathrooms that they completed in July.
Maybe, Chris, you can do a little investigation, find out who owns the property, because I've heard this site proposed by other people. But we've got to go now because we do have our next talk show host who has arrived with a large gun. No, wait, don't shoot! Wait! And actually, I'm just kidding, but he is, in fact, on our tail. So could we ask you to research this?
Yeah, I mean, if they were serious, they'd put it there.
Find out who owns the property and what's going on over there.
Bye.
Thanks.
And this is Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm about to pack up my tapes, my bags, my papers, and my butt and head out of here. I want to remind you the next edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides will be a recorded one, but there'll be some very interesting interviews. We had an interview with the National, Conference on Law, Homelessness Conference on Law and Poverty. It's actually a national organization in Washington, D.C. I don't have the name exactly right. They have informed us that contrary to Mayor Rotkin's claims, there are 2 cities where it's legal for people to sleep at night. Technically legal, officially legal, thanks to federal court suit. That's Miami, Florida, actually 3. Miami, Florida, Key West, Florida, and Dallas, Texas. So for anybody who tells you, it can't be done anywhere, it ain't being done, Santa Cruz is a wonderful place, we're just like everybody else, you can tell them, no, those 3 major urban areas allow sleeping at night. That is by federal court order. And we'll hear more about this in the next recorded show. I will be gone. I will be up in San Francisco at a hearing, a sentence modification hearing, trying to avoid 2 months in jail. But at the same time, I'm unwilling to take probation, so I may go to jail anyway. And you'll be hearing more about that, possibly reports from jail. Again, I want to remind you that there's a Citizens Police Review Board outreach meeting at the Citizens Police Review Board headquarters at, I believe it's 906 Cedar Street, or 905, one of those two. Today at 5:30. On Wednesday at around noon, there'll be a meeting of the Complaint Outreach Committee at that time. Please join us for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides next Friday at 10 o'clock on this station, 96.3 FM, 427-3772. If you want to be on the air on my show, you give me a call at 423-HUFF, and I'll be in town for the next 3 days, even though I may be in stir for the next 2 months. Thank you very much, and if you want to be a part of the caravan that goes north to be at my sentence modification hearing, show up at 6:30, 809 Center Street at the City Hall Vigil, the vigil for the rights of homeless people to sleep at night, 6:30 on Friday morning. I will be there. Try to bring a car because we don't have too much space. We'll see if we can fit you in. In the meantime, I want to much thank our talk show host for being so patient and generous with his time, and thank you all for being with us.